So, Dean, you were saying you've been doing 105. 105, okay. Every day. That's just hats off to you. I was saying to Ian, I do my 21 every evening, and the only reason I manage to do any others is I have my little clicker in my pocket. And every time I go out on the bus, walk on South Bank, go to the shops, I just say my mantras. So I get about 100 every 3 days. And I did set myself I really wanted to have 10% of the 100,000 done by the end of this year. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get there, but maybe with the retreat, maybe I can get there anyway. So let's just take a moment to set our motivation for tonight, and then I'd love to hear also from those of you online. We've got 15 online now. How you're going, and if you have questions, and how you're going with the count, if you're counting or not counting, what all the permutations are. But first, let's just take a moment to focus our purpose for being here tonight. So take a nice deep breath. As you breathe out all the busyness of the day. And how wonderful we've got to the end of the week, and hopefully we've made our life meaningful and worthwhile. We can refresh our motivation, our purpose for being here, for the ultimate benefit of all living beings. And this is such a big project, it's almost impossible to contemplate sometimes. But it is possible to achieve. And what will get us there is our bodhicitta motivation. So we can just recite the prayer to generate bodhicitta, if you remember it. With the wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, so anything else, anything from the room here, any questions or comments that have come up, or the videos have been helpful?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes, well, that was the thing. The mudras was what I was hoping to be able to have my head around tonight. Well, I've only got my head around the easy ones. So we can talk about those tonight. It's something we need to practice, and the way that Geshe Zopa is so incredibly eloquent and fluid with his hands, and then it's like when I try and speak French, I hear beautiful French in my head, and what comes out is just like garbled, mangled, no accent. I just can't form my mouth into the words, even though I can hear them in my head. And it's the same with the mudras. I can see Geshe-la doing the mudras, and I think, oh yeah, that's how they go, and I look at what my hands are doing, and they're going like, ugh. Not quite matching yet. So I suspect it's just practice. Because we had protector prayers last night and being able to do the rhythm with the bell. So I can do that now, but it took me decades to be able to do that. And most of the time I'd do the cheats thing, I'd hold the bell and I'd just go ding, ding, ding like this with my finger. And like people would laugh at me, but that's the only way I could get any coherent sound. And it was at Guru Bumsog, the first Guru Bumsog that I went to, there's 2.5 days of ringing the bell like this. And after 2.5 days, I got it. But it took that long because for the first at least day, it was like all out of sync and who knew what was happening. So it really is practice. And for that one, I can say it definitely works. Now it's totally in my body memory. I can do it. So I'm hoping the rest of the mudras are going to be like that too. Kerry, which alcohol did Geshe Zopa or you recommend for the puja, for the the inner offerings. Which particular alcohol you use as the base for your inner offering depends on a few things. So one is, it's nicer to have something that looks like a warmer colour, I think, rather than clear. So like you can have whiskey or something like that, and they're less sticky, but they're not as nice. So I think we use Grand Marnier. So it's like a whiskey liqueur. And I have in the past used Cointreau, but Cointreau is clear. So all of the liqueurs, they get a little bit sticky. So you've got to be careful when you open the lid that you don't go whoa and it go everywhere. And you've also got to clean around the lid every now and again. So it's up to you. Yep, brandy's great. That it says in some of the texts, it says black tea with a bit of alcohol to stop it going off. So I have used black tea in Queensland, and I can tell you it takes 2 days and you have this amazing bright green mold scum thing growing on the top of it. So never again, no tea for me. Possibly in the Himalayas at minus whatever, it'll work. So you don't drink any of it, Ava. How much do you drink? Zero. So you have the inner offering in the tiny little jar, and so you dip the ring finger in and offer. And you don't actually even have to put your finger in there. You can just touch it to the edge of the pot. If you get stuck with setting up an inner offering, then please email me and I can help you get set up with that one. Very similar to the inner offering, the Bala and Madana, when we offer Tsog. So brandy is a good one for that as the base of it. Okay, any other questions, onliners?
I don't have a question, but I've got a comment. Yeah, so this week I kind of thought about it, and before I started Nyungdros, I used to think of Nyungdros as like you go to the cinema and there'd be the ads before the actual film, which would be the practice. But since doing Nyungdros, I've realized they are the film, because without all the Nyungdros that you do, it's like the ending doesn't make sense. And so it's really changed my mind to how I've approached the Nyungdros.
Yeah, that's right. You think, you hear their preliminaries, but actually they're it. and then we think, oh, if I can just hurry up and get the preliminaries done, then I'll get to the real thing, the important thing, just like you were saying. But actually the Nyungdros are the important thing, the real thing. And actually, I remember Corey telling me something about one of the lamas was going to give a particular initiation, might have been like a Mahamudra one or something, you know, really top shelf. And you had to have had done the refuge Nongdro beforehand. And you had to prove that you'd done it. And otherwise, you couldn't do the initiation. So there was a whole lot of people like cramming, trying to get it done because they wanted the initiation. But of course, the whole thing that makes the initiation good, which is probably just like this long, is the prep of changing your mind, doing the refuge Nongdro. So it's very, yeah, very skillful means. And anyone who's done Nyungnaes, you kind of know that, like, you know, you say refuge and bodhicitta, and then you say refuge and bodhicitta, and then you say a bit further on, and then refuge and bodhicitta again. And it's all part of the actual... It's not like it's a prep for the Nyungne, it is the Nyungne. Then just add on Chenrezig and it works. But if we don't have all that prep, there is no practice. Are we going to do the prostrations? So Ella, the 100,000 prostrations is part of discovering Buddhism. So that's a little different. So to be able to pass the class for discovering Buddhism, there are the 13 study units and the exam questions and then the associated activities. So that's like unit 14. So we talked about this at the class that I just led of integrating study and realizations. So the integration activities, it's unit 14 of discovering Buddhism, doing a pilgrimage, 100,000 Vajrasattvas and 100,000 prostrations. Doing a Nyungne and then being able to lead a Nyungne session, doing three Nyungnes, being able to lead a Nyungne session, and at least 2 week Lamrim retreat. So they're the integration activities minimum for discovering Buddhism, and that's so that all of that academic study doesn't just remain on that level, that we actually have an experience of it. So the 100,000 prostrations come in for that. And here we are doing the 100,000 Vajrasattvas. And the way that Lama Zopa Rinpoche said for doing those hundreds and thousands in discovering Buddhism was again quite relaxed. He said, like, if you're doing them and you forget one day, then the very next day you do them straight away to catch up. You do double that day. But not to worry, not to think, oh no, I have to go back to the very, very beginning again. So that was for discovering Buddhism, just to get them done. So you couldn't fall off for 2 days. You could only fall off for once.
And Miffy, speaking of discovering Buddhism, I was looking at the modules and on all about karma, there's one for weekend Vajrasattva retreat. It says with prostrations. Haven't done the prostrations, but I thought, if anyone's done it and you're trying to complete your card, write it in there that if you've participated in one of the weekend Vajrasattvas here.
So it might be, I'm not sure what it means by with prostrations. It might be with 35 Buddhas prostrations,
Yeah, I think it is
confession and
the
the confession
35.
prayer. The danger of if we don't do these integration activities, either for discovering Buddhism, which Rinpoche has pulled in a couple of nondros into that, or here we're doing nondros as prep for tantric initiation. So if we don't do this kind of practice where it really changes our experience, like you were saying, Dean, it even changes your experience of moving house, it changes our experience of our life. If we don't, there's this danger that we just study. We're very good at studying, and it's really easy to lose our religion. Something happens, things change, and that's it. We give up. We think, oh, this Buddhism doesn't work, or we get distracted. And so, quite often, and again, just this week, I get a bag of stuff left on our doorstep, like a baby abandoned in the middle of the night. And I open up the bag of stuff, and usually it's completely anonymous, and I have really mixed reactions because I know either someone's died, someone's lost their religion, or someone's downsizing. And so, at one, I'm going, oh, look at all these Dharma goodies. And on the other hand, I'm going, oh no, what's happened? So again, this week, I got a bag of stuff and I was looking at it and I'm like, I know whose this is. I can tell. It's like a forensic thing. I can see these are all the things that they're the practices that this person does. I know exactly who it is. And now I don't know what's happened. What's happened to them? Have they lost their religion? Have they, are they downsizing? I don't think they're dead. So there you go. I'm not sure. But it makes me really sad. So how does it come to this, that you can be so into the Dharma and then one day give it all up? All too much. Or I'm into something else now. Or I find this particular self-help or that thing much better. So it's a real shame, and it's not a failing of the Dharma. It's a failing that we don't integrate our practice. And by integrating the practice, it means doing it every day and having an experience of it, and incorporating it into our daily life. And there's a real danger, even with being super smart, really diligent, often actually, if you go really hell for leather at the beginning, you just keep going, and you go out, you come in the door, and then you're out the door. And it's all over. And I've just seen that happen so many times. So we don't want that to happen. And if we're doing our nondros, that is the number one guardian for us. Yeah, so Karen's just saying about this story from Venerable Robina of one of the guys in prison who shoving his cellmate's head down the toilet mid-aggressive action. Something in him woke up and he went, hang on a second, and pulled the head back out of the toilet again. And so Karen asked Venerable, what practice was he doing to make him change, like in the heat of the moment, like that's when it really counts. And she said he was doing nondros. So there you go. Really, because it does go in really, really deep. So yes, to answer your question, Ella, you can do the 100,000 prostrations as part of the discovering Buddhism, and I have heard that you can combine refuge and prostrations at the same time if you want. You don't have to do them one by one by one. So there's all different ways to do it, but it's a really nice thing to do. To have the 100,000 prostrations under your belt. And actually much easier to do than the Vajrasattvas, I've got to say.
With the bell, I recall Geshe Zopa saying it's good to go like ding dong because it means wisdom and bodhicitta. But there's a part in the puja, like you were sort of showing, and you go, it's more like ding, ding,
Yeah, that's the
ding. But
beat.
that
That's
doesn't
yep.
touch both sides, does it? And that's
No,
right.
so I think I was just reading that today in prep for the class, and when Geshe-la was talking about the bell, he was just saying in general, when we ring the bell, it's a meditation on emptiness because there's this intangible sound, it's not a thing that we can grab, and it comes from the tongue of the bell hitting this side and that side and this side and that side. And so as it hits, then we can think that's like the dependent arising, as like ultimate truth and relative truth. It's all in there, this kind of practice. And so where we do that is at the end of the mantra recitation, for the last mantra that you say, you ring the bell at the same time. So you say the mantra really slowly and you ring the bell and meditate on emptiness. But for the rest of the mantra recitation, you're just holding your mala, you're not holding the bell or dhoti. It's just at the end there. And then where we do this a lot with the bell is in Haruka Vajrasattva Tsog. So there's each Tsog verse, and then we recite the Vajrasattva mantra whilst ringing the bell, and we do it really slowly. And that's supposed to be this meditation on emptiness, and especially the sound. And so Lama Zopa Rinpoche actually has a practice that you can do every morning of just ringing the bell, and it's a meditation on emptiness that he's given to some people, where you just ring it once and you hear the sound continue out, and you just follow it, and it just doesn't stop, so it just keeps going. So you get the entire infinite spaciousness. And so it's a really beautiful practice, especially if you suffer from anxiety or OCD, or any of those kind of, really tight, fraught mental states. It's a really calming, beautiful meditation for that. So it's just a little tiny PDF. So you've jumped into the whole bell and dhoti thing, which I wasn't ready for, but for the mudras, the easy one was the mudra of meditation. So you know that one. That's also, so it's the right palm on top of the left. Does anyone know what that means? No, but why? Why right on top of left? Which is wisdom? Left-handed is the wisdom. The left side is always the wisdom. So in Buddhism, wisdom supports compassion. That's the nice way to look at it. Because if wisdom doesn't support compassion, our compassion will run out, will burn out, or it'll turn to hatred. So that's that one. Always everything's cradled by our wisdom realizing emptiness, and then the compassion or the skillful means, which is the right hand. And then the two thumbs together, relative truth and ultimate truth. And then the whole thing, when we sit like this, in the meditation posture, it's like a closed circuit, so it keeps our energy. It's very efficient. So what Geshe-la said about this: the moment you do this meditation mudra, it directly stimulates all your channels, chakras, drops, and subtle consciousness to bring about effective ripening of the generation and completion stages of the path. So it's right from here all the way to the two stages of Highest Yoga Tantra. That's effective purification. It happens in our nervous system, in our cells, and especially the gross aggregates. So just sitting like this is like really strong, conducive conditions for taming our mind. So it's like this, that's part of the biohack of tantric practice, that by taming our gross aggregates, our posture, our channels, using all these mudras, then it has an effect on the mind. So that's the mudra of meditation, number one. Then the second one that he talked about was the mudra of touching the ground. So that's the one. I've got a background for the Zoomers. But with the Buddha, so the right hand on the knee and the fingers touching the ground. So Geshe-la said about this, if you feel there's something uneasy in the place where you're doing your retreat, or there's a disturbance in the earth, meaning if like there are people renovating or earthworks or something, where it's really disturbing the environment, then you sit in that posture. And if you have a Dzogchen bell, then you hold them as well, but just touching the ground then pacifies. So what you can do, he said, you hold the Vajra bell, and you can either hold the bell on your left thigh, like this. So you hold the bell and you put it in like the crook of your thigh. So this Vajrasattva practice, some Vajrasattvas have the mudra like this, but this Vajrasattva practice has the bell down and the Dorji up, and so it's a particular lineage in this tradition. And so then when you do the earth touching mudra, Geshe-la was saying, you can hold the bell like there in the crook of your thigh, and then you have the hand holding the Dorji touching the ground, and it's really powerful. So that, just a mudra like that, stimulates all the different channels and chakras in your body and creates conducive conditions.
Hold it for you.
No, you just hold it. It's like just a really strong, powerful position. And so this way, it's like consecrating your seat for retreat. And then wherever you go, so I thought of this when I went to Longreach for my 1 week holiday at 42 degrees every day retreat, and I thought, I'm going to be in some like stinking motel with all sorts of weirdos in the middle of nowhere, and I'm going to be doing my Vajrasattva, so I'm going to need something. So I read this and I thought, okay, just sit in this posture and it consecrates your seat and it blesses the environment. So Geshe-la said, as an open retreater, wherever you go, you can do retreat, even when you're spending 1 or 2 nights in the hotel. On your bed, before you start the practice, you just do this. So if you have a Vajra bell, use it, and if not, just do the hand mudra. Blessing the ground, blessing the cushion, and then after that, you start the session. He said, especially if outside feels a little eerie or difficult. So I'm just the, you find yourself in unconducive places, or you've got rowdy neighbors, or sometimes like, or it's a full moon and everyone's going a bit crazy, or all of those things. Then this is like a pacifying mudra or position. He said it's almost like doing consecration of the environment or blessing the ground. And so it's the mudra that comes from the Dhyani Buddha of Vajrasattva in the nature of Akshobhya, specifically the embodiment of wisdom. So there you go, just those couple of things, incredibly powerful. And when you do the meditation mudra, you can also hold the Vajra bell if you want. Same thing. Put the right hand on top of the left, and kind of holding it just below the navel.
Sorry, Francesca's just asking, what do you do if one can only sit in a chair?
No worries. Still, just do the same mudra. So you put your hand on the knee, and you can either touch the cushion of the chair. Touch something or other with your fingers. You might have to put them slightly on the side, but that's okay. Being in a chair, that's fine. And also, I remember Bruce asked, because he has difficulty holding a Dzogchen bell, what if you can't hold a bell and Dzogchen or use them? And so Geshe-la said, just having the little ones, the tiny little mini ones, having them on your mala, that's enough. just having them there is enough. It's kind of like the blessing of them. Whether you can use them or not, then it's okay. To use a bell and dorji, you need an initiation. Yep. And so, no, you need to have the, it's like getting your license. You need to have permission to practice. And it's to do with an initiation into that practice. So to use bell and dorji in this practice, then you'd need either a highest yoga tantra initiation or Vajrasattva initiation. So the ringing the bell practice, I think, was something that you could do without an initiation, because you're not generating as a deity. It's a meditation on the sound of the bell. And so I think Rinpoche gave that to a few people that had a bell and dorji but didn't yet have an initiation or any practice at all. So as a way to be able to connect with those holy implements and just ring the bell without having to arise as a deity or anything like that. So you could do that, and that's a really good start. So, yeah, excellent question. And actually, the same person that got that practice asked me the question about purification, and they were saying, like, you know, if Vajrasattva is supposed to purify us, then why do we have to do it all the time? Like, you know, we do it, and Vajrasattva says you're purified. So am I purified or not? It's ongoing, that's right, we constantly sleep. But I must admit, I was a bit floored at first. When they asked me, I'm like, huh? yeah, and I knew there was an answer. But anyway, yes, today I came up with a thing. It's like if you've been out in the garden and you get covered in mud, you've been gardening, whatever, and you come in and you have a shower, how absolutely awesome it is to have a shower and get all that dirt off you. But it's not like you never ever have a shower again, that's right. You have a shower, you feel how wonderful that feeling is. Like, and especially, you know, when it's hot Queensland. So then, yeah, what happens? We get rid of all the gross negativities, but still, then the very next day, we just collect more, don't we?
Right.
So we need to have another shower. But it's not that showering doesn't work. It's kind of like the extent of the purification that we have to do. And so then, you know, we can purify our external form. Then we also need to purify our internal form, like have a detox. You know, when I was an alcoholic and living with a whole lot of alcoholics, everybody's sweat just smelled of tequila, basically. Like, you know, toxic. So you need to have a detox. You need to get all the toxins out of your body, and that comes out in your sweat and everything. So that takes a bit. So that's kind of a different level, though, of cleansing our body. And then, of course, the ultimate solution is, I mean, while we have a body, we're going to have to clean it, aren't we? Because it's in the nature of all-pervasive suffering, of compounded, contaminated, appropriated aggregates. So if we want to have an end to this endless showering, we need a light body. We need one that doesn't smell, that doesn't get old, that doesn't get sick, that is actually purified. So that's what we need, to just ditch these contaminated aggregates and get a light body. So there is a trajectory there. And yeah, we have to do our purification every day.